The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're gonna get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
A Cooley and Kevin Football Friday, Washington and Cincinnati in a huge game Sunday at FedEx Field. I've got to tell you about one of the worst beats. That's sort of a what do you got, which I'll get to here momentarily. And I bet you don't know what Ron Rivera told Cincinnati media either yesterday or the day before, but I'm going to share that with you as well. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Chris is on his phone because the Zoom thing was sounding a little echoey this morning, and I'm not sure why that would be. I mean, did you move spots?
I can't fake this for the third time.
So. Yes, you can. Chris, we can fake this for the third time.
This is the third time that we have done
the open,
the start of this show.
Yeah.
And in the first open, I explained to Kevin as a what do you got, that I was going to come and surprise him in his studio. He said, "What? You're here?" And you were excited, and it was fun, and I was too echoey. And I said, the reason I didn't is because that would be a thoughtful thing to do, and you're just not a thoughtful person, and so I didn't think you deserved a thoughtful act.
I am excited. I'm excited you're here. You're here because you are closing on your house in Northern Virginia, and you did tell me that, and I did remember that. You just did not tell me when you were coming back. You didn't give me a specific date that you were coming back.
Yeah. So
we're not doing the whole open
also,
again.
I'm also not a thoughtful person. So collectively, two non-thoughtful people are going to still do Zoom while I'm in Virginia. I will come in next week and do it with you a couple days. So I want to see you.
So we're going to deal with Cooley's phone today as best as we can because the Zoom was so echoey in his house that has no soundproofing anymore because it's empty. If you'd come into the studio today, it would have sounded the best that it's ever spent. But let me just tell everybody, as Cooley mentioned, this is our third attempt at the open to the show, and it just wasn't good enough. And right now, to be honest with you, your phone's not great either, but it's a hell of a lot better than it was. But Chris had a harrowing story about an airport worker at the very busy Yellowstone Regional Airport in Cody, Wyoming, where he had to stay back as the rest of his family flew, and he had to wait for the next flight, which came 7 hours later. And I'm glad you arrived safely with luggage in hand. But it sounds like you dealt with a person that was pretty difficult.
It wasn't an incredibly difficult situation, but we got to the – here's the story for the third time. We got to the Cody Airport. Our flight was at 7:15. It's a tiny airport, Kev. Like one flight, one terminal. When you park, it's free parking, and you walk literally like 50 yards, and you're inside. I left my truck. I'm going to leave my truck there for 2 weeks. It's free. So actually not 2 weeks, but we get in at 6:42 to a 7:15 flight. There's nobody at the front desk. Non-existent. Well, I got to check bags. She comes in at 6:48, says, "I can't put you on this plane. I can't put these bags on the plane. You're not here 30 minutes before the flight." I said, "Well, we were, in fact, 30 minutes before the flight. You weren't here." She said, "I was at this desk at 6:45. That's when I left it." I said, "No, you weren't." She said, "Yeah, I was." And then, I mean, my wife, like, "Yeah, you were." And blah, blah, blah. So she changes her tune and she says, well, you have to check back 45 minutes before the plane. I'm just looking at her like, I can see the plane. I can see the terminal. No one's boarded yet. Just walk my stupid bags onto the plane and let us go take off. Why would that be so hard? I get that you don't want to, but do it. So anyway, there's a policy in place. You know, I've always went 20, 30 minutes before the flight. It's never been a problem. Apparently, they changed a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever. I'll accept that. What pissed me off was I then stayed. My family got on the plane. I sat with her. She sat on the phone for about 7 minutes before she addressed me again. And then I got my tickets. She printed them out for the next flight at 2:30. I said, did you make sure that I'm still in first class?
Oh, boy.
Because we booked first class tickets. And she said, yeah, I did. She gave me my two tickets stapled together, and off I went. When I got back, I got on the plane from Cody, Wyoming to Denver. I had ticket 1B, the first row. No alarms went off. That would be the first class ticket. There is no first class on that plane, though. It's just a commuter.
Right.
I get all the way through to Denver, and I get to my second ticket, and it says 24B, middle aisle. Like, that bitch put me in the middle aisle and lied to me. Wasn't that mean. I wasn't that rude about anything. I don't know what it was about me. Maybe she didn't like my face. But all that said, I went and got it changed. The other lady said she was sorry. The story was more dramatic the first time I told it, but that's where we're at. I don't know why it's so hard, especially in the world we're in right now, where airports and airlines need passengers to still treat them like shit.
I know. Well, it just seems like people that, you know, when we consider people out in your area, out in Wyoming, that everybody's just so nice. Like, it's just, the East Coast is where you get all the people with toots. But I just would have thought that, you know, the Cody Regional Airport, which if you pull up the Yellowstone Regional Airport in Cody, Wyoming, you pull up pictures of it, it honestly looks like a Lego set of an airport. Like, it's that tiny. And so I can't imagine that walking in there and somebody was just a complete and utter bitch to you. But it sounds like she was. Anyway, I'm glad you made it. And it's, you know, next week is a holiday week, but I think it's going to be warm at least on one of the days. So maybe we can figure out a day to play golf and drink some beers, which would be fun. We enjoy doing that with each other. I'm looking through the weather. 50. I mean, that's mild for you. 57 on Wednesday. And then next, it's not bad. Decent golf weather, but you didn't bring your sticks, so that might be an issue.
Someone will lend me some clubs. We won't have any problem with that. I'll just play with yours.
Or you can just play with mine. All right. Let me just tell you real quickly about, because you love the gambling stories. This was last night. I'm telling you, Cooley, this was one of the worst beats of all time. I did not give this game out on the smell test last night. I didn't like it enough to give it out on the smell test last night. But it was not Seattle, Arizona related. We can talk briefly about that game here in a moment. But the game was between Tulane and Tulsa, all right? Tulsa was a 5.5-point favorite over Tulane at home. Tulsa is the 25th-ranked team in the country, and going into the game last night, they were 4-1, and Tulane was 5-4. Tulsa was supposed to, the public was all over Tulsa. I almost gave it out yesterday. I kind of just forgot, to be honest with you. And I'm glad I did forget, because it would have been another L on the Sheehan smell test. But Tulsa was a 5.5-point favorite, Cooley. And something happened in this college game that I cannot remember the last time I saw this happen. The game was scoreless at halftime. This is college football, where regularly, you know, it's 59-52, 48-46. Halftime's usually 27-24. It was scoreless at halftime, 0-0. It was scoreless into the third quarter before Tulane puts together a couple of touchdowns, and they've got a 14-0 lead at the end of the third quarter. I'm getting 5.5 with Tulane. That's money at that point. I mean, I'm not counting it, because when you're only getting 5.5 and it's a 14-0 lead, what you worry about is a potential 14-14 overtime game where you lose by 7 or you lose by 6 or whatever. Anyway, Just to give you the shortened version, Tulane's in complete control of the game at 14-0. Tulsa gets a drive to cut it to 14-7, but we're into the fourth quarter now. And we're now late into the fourth quarter, and it's 14-7. And Tulsa, with under 4 minutes to go, has a 4th and 14. All right, now they're at the Tulane 27, and I'm flipping it. By the way, I'm flipping it back and forth with Arizona and Seattle as well, because I was into that game last night. I was sort of rooting for Arizona because I've been shorting Seattle on the air, saying that I don't think they're very good anymore. And I still don't think that they're going to be a Super Bowl team. But anyway, it's 4th and 14. They pick it up. Tulsa picks it up, and I'm like, shit. Then they go in, and they score a touchdown to tie it. It's 14-14. But Tulane answers, and at that point, you know, there are 3 minutes to go, Cooley. So really what you want at that point, and what more likely you will get, is a chance for a walk-off field goal. It doesn't matter if Tulsa wins by three or Tulane wins by three. I'm getting 5.5. That would be a winner. Well, Tulane, Tulane drives all the way down the field. We're now down to 1:30 left, and they're facing a 3rd and 11 at the Tulsa 19. Touchdown pass. Tulane's up 21-14 with 1:30 to go, and they've made Tulsa use all of their timeouts. So pretty good chance. I'm in really good shape right now. The win probability on the bet at that point would have been well into the, you know, low 90s, certainly around 90, because, you know, Tulsa could score a touchdown, it could go to overtime, and I could lose the bet. Anyway, Tulsa drives down the field, and on the last play of the game at the Tulane 37, they throw a Hail Mary into the end zone. Touchdown. By the way, this came after two near picks, you know, a definite near pick on one of the throws. And they throw the Hail Mary into the end zone, and it's 21-21. I was hoping when they threw the Hail Mary, hey, why not? Let's go for two. Let's pull an old Riverboat Ron. We got the momentum. Let's accept that Tulsa was the home team, and you know Riverboat Ron's philosophy. You go for two on the road. You go for the tie at home. You go for overtime at home. So they kicked,
right.
And now we go to overtime. So the next step for gamblers when you have the underdog in overtime is you want your team to be on offense first, because then if the other team's on offense first, they're going for the touchdown no matter what, because the other team's going to get the ball back. And so they're going to try their best to get seven. And when you're, you know, getting five and a half,
you need to get seven.
Yeah. But in college, basically the way overtime works is if you win the toss, you always defer and play defense first.
Sure.
And that, because then when you get the ball back, you know exactly what you need to win the game or to tie the game, et cetera. Anyway, Tulane loses the coin toss. I'm sorry, they win the coin toss. They defer, so I'm already sort of fucked there. But they hold Tulsa. They hold Tulsa to a field goal, and it's 24-21. So now what I'm hoping for, obviously, is Tulane to win the game with a touchdown or to end up turning it over or missing a field goal. Well, they get forced to kick a field goal, but they make the field goal. Now we're headed to double overtime. But Tulane's going to get the ball first, so I feel pretty good about them having the ball first. Yeah, 24-24. It'd be nice. What I really love is them not, you know, is for them to kick a field goal, Tulsa to score a touchdown and win it 30-27. Anyway, they get down to a first and goal at the Tulsa 10. It's 24-24 at this point, second overtime. Then it's third and goal at the Tulsa 3-yard line. So, worst case, if they don't get it in, they're going to kick a field goal. They'll be up three. That means I can't lose the bet in this overtime. And the quarterback throws the ball under pressure, and it gets intercepted and returned 97 yards for a touchdown. 30-24 final, Tulsa. 30. Just for anybody struggling with the math.
That's a half a point.
Tulsa won the game by 6. I was only getting 5.5. I needed
Why
to be
you buy the half a point.
You know what I usually do? A lot of times I do, but I'll tell you what, to be honest with you, I really thought Tulane was going to win the game. But beside the point, I made a mistake. I made a mistake. I should have bought the half point. I usually do, but I don't always buy it 5.5 to 6. I always buy it 6.5 to 7 or 2.5 to 3 or 9.5 to 10 or 13.5 to 14. But anyway, you know, it wasn't that I lost on in overtime, you know, with Tulsa scoring a touchdown and Tulane getting stopped. I lost on a 97-yard interception return. Tulsa scored 30 points from basically middle of the fourth quarter through overtime after they couldn't score for the first 3.5 quarters of the game, and I lose that bet. That was painful, man. Painful loss last night.
I'm watching this dude return this thing, just imagining you.
Hold on. Here's the best part of it. You just reminded me of something. So before the third and goal from the 3 play, there was like a delay. I think there was an injury, or maybe they called a timeout, and I flipped it over to the Arizona Seattle game, only to flip it back to see the guy for Tulsa that had intercepted the ball trucking it into the end zone. I actually didn't catch the whole play from the start. I just see him trucking into the end zone and the announcers going nuts and they're mobbing. And I'm like, oh my, no. What happened here? They just scored on defense, didn't they? Oh, Jesus. Gambling.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a bad
beat. I mean, the even sicker part of this is they max up the protection.
you're watching the play.
It's a three-man combination. They max the protection. They leave an unblocked B-gap. The quarterback's got the media pressure in his face. And then the backer who's supposed to be covering the back sloughs off into it. Oh, this is brutal.
You know what's so funny? Like when I flipped it on.
Tell you what, though, if you had Tulsa, you were hyped.
Oh my God, it's one of the all-time great wins. But you don't remember the great wins as much as you remember the horrible losses. Trust me, as someone who's bet sports forever, it is always the bad beats that you remember more than the glorious wins. You know
This was multiple bad beats.
Yeah, there was. This will lead Van Pelt's bad beats on Tuesday or whenever he does that on his show.
It's a nightmare.
He texted me. When it happened. He goes, Tulane, can you believe it? And I'm like, oh my effing God. You know, it's funny, the mind of a bettor is when you see the guy trucking as I flipped it over and I see all the celebration. I'm still hanging there for a moment. I'm incredulous as to what I believe I just picked up on the tail end of. But then you know what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for the flag that nobody saw. But that never came. It was over.
Is there a flag? There's got to be a flag.
Come on, please, a flag. Real quickly in the game last night, the Arizona-Seattle game. You know, you said something to me. I think you said something to me a while back about Russell Wilson sometimes from the pocket not seeing the complete field. And you think he's much better at that, and I get that. But he's obviously...
Well, I think he knows where everybody is.
Yeah.
I think there are times that he just doesn't see it because of his height.
Sam Monson, who I actually really like from Pro Football Focus, you know, was talking about how Russell Wilson's completion percentage is so high in part because he believes Wilson would rather take a sack than throw an incompletion. And I don't know if that's true or not, but there are times when I really do watch Russell Wilson and I think, man, why didn't he just throw it away? And he takes a big sack.
Well, I mean, I'll answer it.
Okay.
Because he doesn't ever think he's going to get sacked.
He thinks
he can avoid.
Yeah.
I'm sure based on history and who he is as a player, he believes he can elude the sack. So as opposed to throwing it away, he thinks he can get out of the pocket and make play. He does it more times than he doesn't.
He gets sacked an awful lot. He's second right now in the league in sacked and taking sacks.
He's always gotten sacked a lot.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to sit there and tell you for 7 years they need help on the offensive line. They keep addressing it. There's a reason he takes sacks. It's because he can't see the check down.
Yeah, but when he starts moving around, there's nobody better when he starts moving around and the plays that he can make downfield throwing the ball. So they have the easiest schedule left in the NFL. I don't know if anybody knows that. The easiest remaining schedule in the NFL Seattle has, which, by the way, includes three NFC East opponents in their next four games with the Jets in between. They play the Eagles, Giants, Jets, and Washington. That is Seattle's next four games. I personally don't think they're the best team in the NFC, but they're going to be in the postseason because they're already 7-3 and they're going to get no less than four more wins. And they might, I think, win the division, although I think that game with the Rams later in the year could decide the division, especially considering that the Rams have already beaten Seattle once. I mean, the Rams, though, still have the Bucks, they have the Cardinals, they have the Patriots. They have the Cardinals twice, actually. So their schedule is different. But I'm actually, I guess, in part because I think that I recognized last week that I don't think Seattle's as great as everybody else thought they were. And I talked about it on the show with Tommy yesterday, that there have been some Vegas tells on Seattle. Their odds to win the NFC Championship have dropped significantly over the last couple of weeks. I mean, they had lost three or four games going into last night. But I also think that there was like some recognition that they were flawed, especially on defense. But I guess they're getting healthier. Pete Carroll talked about that. Carlos Hyde looked pretty good last night. I'll tell you, what is your take on Kyler Murray right now? Did you watch the game last night? You probably didn't.
I was on a plane last night.
Yeah, you were on a plane last night. So I'll tell you, Murray's another guy. Sometimes he's so small, I don't think he sees enough. But he's so fast, he can make plays, obviously. Do you know, last night, one of the interesting things about that game last night is he never really got loose as a runner. I don't even know what his numbers were. Here they are. Five carries, 15 yards. Like, he never really got loose as a scrambler or a runner. In fact, they seem to have him pegged. He got sacked three times. It seemed like it should have been more. But anyway, Seattle wins again.
My take on Murray is that he can throw anywhere from a B ball to an A-plus ball. You know what I'm saying? Like an F. Like, he can throw some really errant and flippant throws, and then he can make some throws that you go, wow. So,
I think he throws normally, with touch as well as anybody does with touch.
I would agree with you. But when you if you were watching Arizona game start to finish, you're going to see five incompletions at a minimum in that game where you go, man, he airmailed that, or oh, that was a risky throw. And I mean, there are five opportunities for a defense to make plays every single game against Kyler Murray at this point. Now, he makes some incredible plays with his legs, too. And he's not just a running quarterback, but as you design this, I'm surprised that Seattle doesn't do this more. We talked about this earlier in the week, and you start to see it, and you've seen it in college, is that those receivers outside, just have them sit down at 0 yards out in the flat. If your quarterback can't see the check down around the tackle box, just give them an outlet outside.
Right. I went sort of blank there. I don't think Murray throws with great touch. I think Russell Wilson throws with the best touch.
Murray can throw a touch. I've seen Murray throw with great touch. I don't disagree with that. The fact that he has touch on a ball. I think he can throw from multiple angles. I think he can throw with multiple velocities. I think there's something there to him. I just think he's a shortstop that might throw it over the first baseman's head once a game.
One other quick comment from this game, you know, Isaiah Simmons, who people were raving about, you know, before the draft last night, he looked like the guy that people were talking about. He was all over the field in that game. That's the first time I've watched Arizona where I've noticed that. I'm sure an Arizona fan will tell me that he's had a couple of good games. But he was all over the field. And this was after, remember, early in the year, he wasn't even getting that many snaps.
He got benched early in the year.
I'm sorry?
He got benched early in the year before we played them.
Right. We're going to get to Washington wins if. We'll get to a smell test, lock of the week, and a pick. I wanted to just mention that I saw this early this morning, and as it turns out, my gut on this was correct, that it had not really been something that a lot of people in town had seen. And it was because Rivera made this statement in his weekly get-together with Cincinnati reporters. What NFL coaches do is they do their, you know, weekly media requirements with the local media, and then every NFL coach will do a Zoom call, all right, or a conference call with the opposing team's media on Wednesday or Thursday. I don't know what day of the week it is. It might have been yesterday. But anyway, I saw this late last night, early this morning, and I thought it was very interesting because the headline was Ron Rivera says Joe Burrow would have been drafted by Washington if not the Bengals. And the quote was from Rivera, quote, "We feel like championships are won by playing good defense. We felt pretty strongly about Chase Young. The only other option we felt was a viable one for us was Joe Burrow, and obviously he was taken by Cincinnati. We think Joe is the full package. We really do. We think Chase is the full package. Depending on what Cincinnati did, that's what we were going to do, the opposite." So, look, you would have taken Burrow. I would have taken Burrow. A lot of you felt the same way, that if for whatever reason Cincinnati, remember we did all the hypotheticals, if Cincinnati doesn't take Burrow, would you? And we were all like, of course. No matter what your feeling was about Dwayne, everybody that I know felt even more strongly about Burrow, except for those of you out there that said, well, wait a minute, hold on, Burrow, Dwayne beat Burrow out at Ohio State. Like that was really relevant, because it wasn't. So obviously, you know, there would have been some interest, but the fact that he disclosed this now and said it and admitted it, I think is very interesting. First of all, we now know definitively that he could and would have been allowed to take a quarterback. Remember, there was some discussion about whether or not Dan would actually let him take a quarterback, you know, if Joe Burrow was there. And Tua, remember, had the hip injury, and Chase Young was one of the highest evaluated defensive players in recent draft history. So, you know, I think they probably made a really good pick in Chase Young. But the fact that he admitted that is interesting. Like, look, he's been, you know, all over the place in his media stuff and whatever. I mean, we can nitpick it. We have nitpicked it. He's got a lot of issues going on, obviously. But it's really, you know, an absolute, if there was any confusion with anybody, that they just never really believed in Dwayne being their franchise quarterback moving forward. I mean, I guess...
I hear what you're saying. I think it would have been really interesting if Chase Young was having a season where he struggled, maybe even played somewhat like Dwayne played last year, and then he came out and said, yeah, Chase Young has the full package. He was definitely going to be the guy if they didn't take Chase Young. Joe's playing great right now. I mean, I get it that they don't have a lot of wins, but I think Joe's doing an exceptional job as a young quarterback. Everyone was going to take Burrow first. Every single team in the league would have taken Joe Burrow first.
They're just – it's – So,
well, when I say that, I mean every single team that didn't have a top 10 quarterback would have taken Burrow, or they would have traded the pick for immense value.
Right.
To me, the interesting hypothetical would be, in hindsight, would you take Herbert?
Yeah, but that's a hindsight thing. I want to stick to this for a moment for a couple of reasons. Number one,
I don't think there's enough value in it, because I think it's too much of a no-brainer. Look, dude, come on. I mean, as much as you want Dwayne to be great, he wasn't last year. He wasn't necessarily at Ohio State. Most people had him in the second round. I'll bet you if Carolina went back and looked at it, I'll bet you they had Dwayne in the second or third round.
No. Rivera said that they had him as a first rounder. But let me tell you something you told me when we were doing our pre-draft conversations. I said to you, hey, if by chance, and none of us expected to happen, it was a hypothetical, if by chance Cincinnati said, oh my God, Chase Young's the best defensive player in decades, we're not passing on him. And I said, if Burrow's available, would you take him? And you said, of course, in a heartbeat. And I said, me too. And I said to you then, do you think they would? And you said, probably not. You told me probably not. And that was not an unusual reaction for anybody playing that hypothetical game, because a lot of people believed in Dwayne, but more importantly, the owner believed in Dwayne. And that's why you gave me that answer.
And that might have changed the decision for what it was when they made the decision. If Burrow had went to number two, the owner might have said, you're going to trade it for picks.
Yeah. But the fact that Rivera is now revealing that Burrow would have been the pick had he been there tells us, if he's being straight up, that Dan had no – Ron was able to do what he wanted to do. There's more to this, too. The other part of this is, look, Ron could say, we were going to give Dwayne a shot, and there was a chance Dwayne could be our franchise quarterback, and that's why we gave him the first four games. But Burrow, we had evaluated really high. We would never have passed on Burrow, and that's why I mentioned that I would have taken Burrow. And that's a reasonable answer, that, hey, if we have Dwayne and we don't have another guy, we believe Dwayne could be the guy, but Burrow was just at a different level from an evaluation standpoint, so we would not have passed on him. In the same way, you know, not apples to apples, Arizona, you know, moved on from Rosen a year later for Kyler Murray. But he obviously could have said that. But by revealing this, I mean, it really is very much, whether he meant it that way or not, it is another reveal on zero chance that Haskins is back next year. And he knew it at the time. He knew it intuitively. He knew it deep in his soul, in his heart, in his mind. And my only problem with that is the problem that everybody's had here when they've gotten here is they have felt a bit beholden to do something to please the owner until it became obvious that it wasn't the thing to do. And that's why I said when they benched him after four games, the whole thing was a frickin' sham. Like, you know, he knew, Scott Turner knew, that this wasn't going to be their guy. So why did they ever waste any time with it? Why didn't they deal him in the offseason when there was a chance maybe to get a lot more for him and just start Kyle Allen? And then, you know, and then on top of that, just to take it to another hypothetical, imagine Tua never had the hip surgery and Tua was Tua, tanking for Tua. And then Burrow really was number two. Or maybe Tua was number two, but it was a healthy number two. I wonder what they would have done then. Anyway, my point is...
I wonder what they would have done as well. And I'm not going to guarantee you that they would have just moved on from Dwayne. I'm not going to guarantee you. I would have.
I know you would have. So would have I, if Burrow had been there.
But just because Ron said we would have taken the best quarterback prospect in the last, whatever, 6 years, doesn't actually mean that that was a guarantee. Maybe it was. Maybe they had that conversation. The other thing that I would buy in that conversation is, if you were to want to sell the owner, Joe Burrow was one of the most hyped quarterbacks and played at an exceptionally high level in games that the owner would have watched.
Yeah, good point.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Is a guy that really gets into hype about players.
Uh-huh. Something he could sell.
Hype. Oh, you could sell Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. Like, the interest, like, Tua, I think you could sell too, and I think that would be interesting. Had Herbert been just a little bit more exciting as a prospect, to me, Herbert's the one. I know you're not going to do the hindsight thing, but I just don't think there's a. Like, it was Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I'm just reminding you, and I could go back and find this. I remember specifically saying, if for whatever reason Burrow dropped to number two, and you didn't even let me finish, you go, I take Burrow. And I said, I would too. And I said, if he did, do you think they would? And you said, I don't think so.
And I understand.
Yeah. So I think, you know, first of all, to be honest with you, this is another one of those things, really, when you think about it, and this was my last point. He shouldn't be saying, you can say how impressed you are with Joe Burrow without admitting that you would have taken him had Cincinnati hadn't taken him. Because, again, if you want to get any kind of compensation back for the quarterback you have, it's all about building up that quarterback. And maybe that ship has sailed because of what they did when they benched him. You know, they publicly knocked him, and then the leaks came out. And maybe they've already blown it on that. And maybe the tape on Dwayne's already blown it for them on that. But, again, I just don't see the upside for Rivera in admitting this publicly. Do you?
I don't see much of a downside because I think this one was a no-brainer.
Okay.
I'm trying to establish the fact that I don't think he's devaluing Dwayne by making this statement.
Okay.
So I don't see a downside to it. Now, again, we're currently at a point where you're talking about, I get value in the draft, okay? I truly understand it, but we're talking about a point where you're going to have to continue to play this dumb game in the media to get a fifth-round pick instead of a sixth, or a sixth-round, the value isn't there anymore.
Okay, that's fine.
Now, maybe to your point, in the early parts of Ron Rivera's meetings with the owner, and in the early understanding of where they wanted to go and his evaluation of Dwayne, he could have said, we need to move this guy. Right now, there's a chance that we could get a second for him. A second would be absolutely huge as we get to this draft. That may have changed things. Also, keep in mind, they didn't have a second because they had traded the second for Montez Sweat.
Right.
Getting into the second pre-draft may have been plausible. I'm not 100% sure. But you could have traded Dwayne in a fifth to get to a second, or Dwayne plus if that wasn't there. But as he played through the first four games of the season, I do think some of the film, and then obviously a lot of what surrounded it, dictated that it wasn't there. Now, there might be something where another team said, look, we're willing to develop a guy. But and there was enough that we saw at Ohio State, and there's enough game management that we saw through 15 games in Washington or whatever, however many he had, that we'll give a fourth. But you're going to need at least two of those teams to get to that point. I don't think you're going to get it. I don't think people really want to develop young quarterbacks. I don't know if there's anything you can do with this situation. So go live your life. Go live your coaching life. Say what you want to say.
Look, I mean, the bottom line is, of course, most people would say if Burrow was there, you draft Burrow. Like, we all had the sense. That really isn't the issue. The issue is whether or not they would have. He says they would have. But in the moment back, you got to put yourself back into that moment. Would he have been allowed to? Well, he's saying now he would have. But beyond that, it is the there's more to this. It leads to me thinking, what Ron really should have done is just man up early on and tell Dan, Dwayne's not my guy. He's not a guy I have any interest in developing for this reason. We need to trade him. And more importantly, Dan, we have to make a very strong move for the best quarterback we've evaluated in the draft in years. We love Chase Young, and if we don't get Joe Burrow trading up to number one, then we'll take Chase Young. But the quarterback's more important, and we have to be aggressive in going after Cincinnati's number one. It was as close to maybe the next great one as they'll ever get. They were one spot away. They could have had a blockbuster package ready to go, or maybe Cincinnati would have never dealt it, which, by the way, would be my lean. But I just wish somebody would come
in. Because they might have said it doesn't matter if it's Tua or Herbert.
Right.
Obviously,
could have.
Love Burrow, but we could get X amount of things. But to your point with Rivera, it's just funny because the common thing is when you go into an interview, everything's great, Kevin. I think you're going to appreciate where I'm going with this. Everything's great. We love what's your philosophy on that? Totally in line with you. We love that. We appreciate that. You get the job and you go, I think maybe we got to move on from this quarterback. Now that I'm here and I see it, I said it was great, but it's not great. But he got the job. The other interesting thing with that is, like, if he really knew it, was it a sure thing that, I mean, Rivera was the only interview, I think. Like, the Rivera was the only guy that they wanted. I don't even think the Washington reached out to other coaches.
Marvin Lewis, they did. I know that for a fact. They did reach out to Marvin Lewis. If it hadn't worked with Rivera, I think it was going to be Marvin Lewis.
But they didn't necessarily
interview him, right, because the Rivera thing went well.
Process, they had they had candidate A, and then they had contingencies.
Right.
And I think Marvin Lewis would have been a contingency at that point.
Agreed.
And so, look, I believe a huge mistake that they made, even if they did want to hire Ron Rivera, was to not go out and interview 10 coaches and understand what they think of your team, ask them questions about your players, ask them a lot about evaluations of Dwayne, the direction that you think he would be best fitted in. And there's just this amazing fact-finding mission that they could have went through, and they didn't. They chose to just immediately hire Ron Rivera.
Well,
now, maybe he was coveted by somebody else, but it sure seems like the Giants like their guy, that Carolina likes their guy. But, you know, I mean, where else was he going to – my question at this point
the Giants,
would be, what was the true market?
Well, I think the perception at the time was that Dave Gettleman and the Giants would have been a spot, you know. And but who knows, really? I guess to your point, it wasn't very smart, but this isn't been a smart organization in terms of the way they operate. And so, you know, Dan calls Joe and Joe says, come down and talk to Ron. And they talks to Ron and he's got this coach-centric idea, which, you know, like he had just discovered the cure for coronavirus. And he, you know, wishes everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And he turns it over to somebody where he can say, you know, we're going to change the culture because that was Bruce's fault. And we got a new guy here who's a culture guy. Let's go. I don't know. I personally, the net of this is I don't see any upside in Ron Rivera admitting whether he could or couldn't do it, that they would have taken Joe Burrow. Because it is, whether he believes it or not, or whether he intended it or not, it's a shot at Dwayne again. I just don't see an upside in that. I mean, think about it. It's really a shot at him because, you know, Burrow was an Ohio State guy. He beat Burrow out, you know. Like, there was talk about that before the draft. It just seems like the knocks on Dwayne, whether subtle or intended or not intended, they just sort of keep coming. And I don't really understand the upside in that. I would have just said about Joe Burrow, he's really good. We're so impressed.
He's terrific.
Right.
Yeah, I think that you don't have to reveal more than that. I'm with you. My only argument would be I don't see a real downside to saying we would have taken this guy.
Okay. Let's get to Washington beats the Bengals if our keys to the game right after this word from one of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's get to Washington beats Cincinnati. If you kick it off, don't throw it back to me. You kick it off, please.
They outplay another bad team. No, seriously. The Bengals are not a good defense. I haven't been impressed with Cincinnati's defense. They give up almost 27 points a game. They consistently give up points to everyone they play. They give up points with the run game and the pass game. They're just they're a balanced mess defense. And so I think offensively, you control the ball, you control the clock. You stay and keep within balance offensively, and you outplay what I think is another pretty bad team. I know that's it's not really cliche, but
this is going to be quick this week. I can tell.
What do you want to do? We're talking about four collective wins between the two, or do the Bengals have one win?
The Bengals have two wins.
You know what I'm saying?
They're 2-5-1. They tied the Eagles. Yeah.
Oh yeah, they did have a tie.
Right.
So I mean, you outplay a team that I think you're better than is one, and especially I think you have to get it done on offense.
So my first one is, you know, obviously, I mean, this has been a team whose losses totally fit into the cliche answers. They're -6 in the turnover margin in the three games that they've lost, you know, so you can't be that, you know, you can't keep inflicting damage and slapping yourself in the face, especially in the midst of being a very efficient offensive football team. You know, in their last four games, Washington's offense ranks 6th overall in yards per game, 1st on third downs, right? I knew their conversion percentage was high. It's over 50%. They're number one in the league on one of the most important statistics in terms of how it relates to winning a football game, third down conversions over the last four games. They're 8th in time of possession. And we know that the teams they have faced aren't as good as the teams that Dwayne faced or the team faced early in the year. But still, they are moving the football. And the results of moving this football the way they have in sort of very efficient and borderline dominant fashion in terms of moving the football, not necessarily scoring points, should result in more points. But the reason it hasn't is the field goal kickers miss field goals, and they've turned the ball over as they have been moving into scoring territory. And they took a sack last week that, amazingly, after 1st and 10 at the Detroit 16-yard line, they ended up out of field goal range. Actually, in field goal range for most teams, but for Ron on Sunday with his kicker, out of field goal range. So the bottom line is they have to avoid these self-inflicted, you know, mistakes and damage, because if they can avoid that, they're going to be a very productive offensive team, and they're going to score a lot of points, especially against Cincinnati. To your point, it's not a good defensive team. In the same way that they've moved the ball against Detroit, New York, and Dallas, which, you know, I don't even count as a team the day they faced them, they should be able to put up a lot of points. Now, they could get outscored by Cincinnati, but I think the key is just to avoid as much as possible the things that have kept them from scoring a lot more points the last four games. Let's face it, they scored 27 last week, and it should have been no less than 33. You know, and it should, and really, could have been as much as 40, you know, or 34 or 37. They had that kind of offensive production in terms of the ability to score. Same thing with the Giants, you know. They moved the football, and you had 5 turnovers in the game. You can't have 5 turnovers in a game. And they still scored 20 in a game in which they had 5 turnovers. Anyway, the point number one is, it limit the mistakes, turnovers, missed field goals, sacks knocking you out of scoring range, because you're doing all of the other things that should lead to big offensive days really well. And you should be able to do that Sunday against Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's how you outplay a bad football team. You limit mistakes. You pay attention to details. We talked about this earlier this week or last week. A lot of your young players, you got to start focusing on ball security in practice. You got to make that a point. I think everybody understands that Alex is the guy that knows how to manage a game, and by that I mean he'd rather throw incompletions than throw interceptions. That's clearly Alex Smith, and so I don't think you necessarily worry about it like that, in that situation. But you can't have Terry McLaurin and Steven Sims and Gibson and a lot. McKissick has fumbled in the last couple weeks, and you just can't afford these fumbles and these inane turnovers. But that's part of beating a bad football team. My second point to this, Kev, is you got to force Burrow to throw incompletions in this ballgame. To me, he's a guy that's not – like, the Bengals are not a big play offense. Now, they have some good weapons. I mean, they still have A.J. Green. Boyd's having a really good year. And Cincinnati
well, T. Higgins looks like a star. Now, he missed practice yesterday.
He's out with an illness.
Yeah, it would be nice to see him out.
Higgins looks like a star. Boyd's a big-time player, and A.J. Green can still make plays. I don't see Cincinnati as a dynamic rush offense. You know, I think when you look at the Bengals, they're pretty average in terms of running the football, and I think our front should be able to manage them. So to me, it's as much as you can on first and second down situations, you can't let Joe Burrow get 7, 8, 9 yard gains. You can't let him get that intermediate range going and get into a rhythm with some of his really good receivers. I think, you know, to me, I would press him. I would challenge him. I would try to disrupt the timing of Burrow. And I think if you can do that, he's a guy that you can get after as a pass rush. So force incompletions. And I would basically put it at this. If you hold Burrow under 60% passing, I think you're going to win the game.
Keim had this stat that right now, the last 4 weeks, quarterbacks have thrown the ball an average of 2.52 seconds against Washington's defense. Only two teams have faced faster releases in that time, which tells you that the teams are playing. I mean, Stafford, obviously, and Daniel Jones. I mean, take the Dallas game out of the equation, but that counted. But anyway, the point is, they're getting it out quickly, which is why you're not seeing, and one of the reasons you're not seeing a lot of sacks. You know, a lot of people are very hung up on where are all the sacks from Chase Young and Montez Sweat and John Allen and Daron Payne. Well, the quarterbacks are getting the ball out of their hands very quickly. Burrow is a really good extend the play quarterback, and he's made a lot of his big plays extending the play. Part of that, too, has led to a lot of sacks. He's the third most sacked quarterback in the league in terms of numbers, second most sacked in terms of average number of sacks taken in a game. Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, the Bengals have played some pretty good defensive teams during the course of the year. They played the Steelers, they played the Titans, they played the Colts, they played the Ravens, they played the Eagles. Like, they played some really good defensive teams this year. I think Washington's a good defensive team. We obviously, over the last 2 weeks, have a different impression, you know, of their ability to stop the run, which has been a problem. And some of the, you know, as we discussed, you know, yesterday or Wednesday, you going through the whole last sequence and that terrible last play at the 50-yard line. But you've got to get to Burrow, you can't let him extend, because if he does extend, they're going to have a problem covering, because they do have weapons, and you're going to end up in a shootout where if you end up with more turnovers, you're going to lose the game, because you're going to have to score and you're going to have to keep the ball away from Burrow. But when Burrow has it, you got to get after him, man. And if you get after him and he escapes, then Higgins and Boyd and Green are going to make big plays down the field. Big plays.
No, I love that stat, and I completely agree with you. And it's been interesting because Del Rio's really mixed and matched coverages and blitzes and fronts, and they've really tried to get after teams in the last couple of weeks with some of these blitz looks. The thing is they're playing zone behind it, and he's a zone blitz guy. And some of the zone behind it has been poor, to say the least. So I think this potentially is a week where, like I suggested before you even brought that up, you get up and you start pressing and challenging receivers. And I think you got corners that can play some man-to-man stuff. And maybe this is a two-man type of week where you believe your front four can get to the quarterback and you play two-man and maybe even bracket Higgins with the safety at times, or play two-man where both your safeties are essentially helping on their two big receivers. And so it's not even necessarily just two-man. It's like a man where you're in and outing their two big-time players. And you're saying, you're not going to beat us in rhythm. You're going to have to extend. We're going to help on the biggest players. And we believe in our front four collapsing the pocket and getting to Burrow. I mean, he's been sacked 32 times this year.
Right.
Like you said, it's second in the league. They have the second most sack yardage given up. and they are not a big play offense. I think they only have three plays in the year of 40 yards plus downfield, which is obviously not a big time number. They're seventh in the league in 20 plus yard plays down the field. Again, not a big number. So your theory is, or your thought process, let's trust our guys to play and jam and trust the fact that Joe Burrow wants to get the ball out early. And everybody that they've watched over the last 3 weeks on film is beating zone coverage by getting the ball out early. So let's make that change defensively.
The last one for me, other than, you know, the obvious, like the kicker doesn't miss any more kicks, but that was sort of the self-inflicted damage, is I said last week about Detroit that they don't rank very – they rank pretty low in rush defense like the Cowboys had, and I think Scott Turner has really attacked things that they think they can attack. But I mentioned last week, it may be a little bit misleading with Detroit because they have been very effective against the run in some games, but they've given up a lot of yards in others, which can really skew the average. Well, Cincinnati's the same. Cincinnati's ranked, you know, near the bottom in rush defense again, which, you know, for those that want Washington to be, you know, a team that runs the football and is physical and plays slobber knocker football, and, you know, Cincinnati's like 28th, I think, against the rush, something like that. Dallas is, you know, last or second to last, and Detroit was there.
Cincinnati's 29th.
What is Cincinnati's 29th? Okay. I knew it was low. So, but if you look at their games, which I went back and looked at some of them, like last week against Pittsburgh on an exceptionally windy day, Pittsburgh, 20 carries, 44 yards, 2.2 yards per carry. They had another good – they gave up a bunch of yards to Derrick Henry. But against, I think it was the Colts, they only gave up, you know, 15 carries, 59 yards. So – last week, you know, Scott Turner really, part of it is they got behind and they ended up throwing the ball 55 times, as we know. My point here on the last thing, Washington wins if, don't get hung up on ratio, run to pass ratio. I think we've seen that this team with Kyle Allen and with Alex Smith and with some of the quick passing concepts with some of, you know, using the check down, using bubbles, using run extension throws. Also with Alex last week, getting the ball down the field. He threw it 55 times and they almost won the game. They didn't win the game. I understand that. But they were on the verge of potentially winning the game if they didn't give up a ridiculous last drive. Against the Giants in the Meadowlands, Kyle Allen threw the ball 42 times. And they nearly, you know, they had a chance with a two-point conversion, or if they kicked, to win the game. I would not get hung up on looking at Cincinnati's rush defense. We're not a rush team. You know, against Dallas, everybody's been running the ball against Dallas. But I don't care how they move the football, Cooley. I don't care if Alex Smith ends up being this week 31 of 45 for 292 or 307. As long as their third down conversions are 8 for 15 again, or 9 for 16, you know,
offensive balance.
I don't care about the balance. I want the sticks moved.
Okay, well, I think you can move with this team with offense balance. But yeah, no, I hear you. You got to control the ball on offense. That's what you're suggesting. I suggested balance. You just said control the ball on offense.
However it works. Last week it worked by throwing the football. It worked against the Giants the first time throwing the football. If they think they can, if it works running the football, great. But I would not look at Cincinnati's rush defense number and say that it's going to be easy to run the football against them.
They give up 5 yards a carry is the thing.
Yeah. It's because a couple of people have had big games against them.
They're actually not.
We don't have Derrick Henry.
Total yards. Well, yeah, you can run it on them. So, I don't know.
You have anything else?
No. I'm actually excited to watch the game. Honest with you, in part because I haven't watched a lot of games with Joe Burrow. So I'm excited to watch this game. I'll be really excited to watch this film afterwards with Burrow. Normally, I have a little bit more time to watch some film on some of the opposing teams with traveling and everything this week. I didn't get to watch much Cincinnati.
All right, well, let's do a smell test lock of the week right after this word from one of our sponsors.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Kevin looks where the John Q. Public is putting their cash and does the opposite. It's time for the smell test.
And the smell test is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. If you're looking for a place to wager on sports, MyBookie's the place, and I would definitely give them a roll first. And you can actually roll. You can actually get into their table games area, their online casino, and play a little, you know, craps. You can play cards. You can play blackjack. You can play slots. They've got it all. Tread very lightly if you're not into and you haven't been exposed to gambling. Just tiptoe into it. But this is a place you can trust. They're going to give you fair pricing, fair lines, and you're going to get paid if you win. And if you use my promo code, KevinDC, they will match your deposit up to half of the amount. So if you deposit $500, they'll give you an extra $250 to play with, all the way up to $1,000. So if you want to deposit $1,000, they'll give you $500 additional to play with. But you've got to use my promo code, KevinDC. I've mentioned this to all of you that do wager and you already have a site. You might as well just sign up at mybookie.ag, use my promo code, get the free half match, and then you've got a place to comparison shop in terms of lines. If you're really into betting, you shouldn't be relying on one spot anyway. You should have a couple of spots where you can comparison shop point spreads and get the best number, get the best pricing on a money line. That makes much more sense. Trust me, it adds up over the course of a season if you're taking advantage of the best possible line and pricing. MyBookie.ag is one of those places you can totally rely on and totally trust. MyBookie.ag, use my promo code, KevinDC. All right, I have, wow, a smell test coolie that I'm just going for it this week.
Can I pick my luck of the week before you do your smell test?
Sure. Yeah, let's change it up. Maybe it'll be for better luck for me. What was your lock of the week last week? I forget.
I think it was Washington. It was a bad pick.
Yeah.
I had a good feeling. I think that they should have covered. They were better than Detroit.
All right, give me your lock of the week.
So this is just from something I heard. It's not sharp money or anything, but. And I normally don't pick college football, but I have a tie to this game enough that I would feel uncomfortable betting on it. Louisville is a 2-6 football team. They're playing Syracuse, a 1-7 football team. Great game to watch, Kev. Great game to watch. Louisville is an 18.5 point favorite right now.
Uh-huh.
That's a big number for a 2-6 football team, even though they're playing a 1-7 football team. Syracuse is terrible. They just are. Syracuse is terrible. They're on like their fourth quarterback. They cannot really score offensively. They give up points. Louisville actually can score. They've been in some ball games. They smoked Florida State. Louisville's going to dominate this game. I think Syracuse is a bad football team. Really bad football team. I feel like I wanted to go first because so many times you pick all these games, and then I just got to pick my my lock of the week off of your smell test, and I'm just following you. And so I wanted to be bold with this one. I don't know if it's in your smell test or not, but I see Louisville, an 18.5-point favorite, winning this game in a landslide at 7 o'clock tonight, tomorrow night, whatever day you're watching this.
No, it's tonight. It's an early pick. You know why? You know why I know that?
Because it's in your smell test.
Of course. It's the first game
in my
smell test.
That's why I wanted to go first. I feel so strong about this game.
The best part about this is Syracuse actually played one of their best games of the week last week and covered against BC, who the week before almost beat Clemson in Death Valley. Now, Trevor Lawrence didn't play in that game. But the line is way too big, and the public's playing Syracuse. So, yes, my first smell test play is Louisville laying the 18.5 tonight on a Friday night game against Syracuse, who you know is terrible. I've got another Friday night game for you. Two Friday night games. Minnesota is a terrible team, and Purdue's decent, and Purdue's laying 2 on the road to Minnesota. Give me Minnesota tonight plus the 2 at home. Let's go to Saturday. I got a lot of games, so I'm going to rip through these fairly quickly. New Mexico, somebody told me. New Mexico, somebody told me, is a major, you know, anti-public play against Air Force. But more than that, this person told me New Mexico's not a terrible team and nobody knows it yet. And I started looking at it. I'm like, all right, they lost to Nevada by 7. They lost at Hawaii by 6. They've covered their last 2. They covered, they almost covered against San Jose State. Whatever. I got New Mexico plus 18 tonight. Or tomorrow. That game is
analysis.
That game is tomorrow. Plus 18. Great analysis.
Way too much analysis.
Nebraska should not be a 15.5-point favorite over Illinois. I'll take Nebraska laying 15.5. UCF, this is probably going to be a big mistake. They're getting 5.5 against Cincinnati tomorrow. Man, every time I go against Cincinnati, it doesn't work out. I'm going to do it one more time. The public's all over the 7th-ranked undefeated 7-0 Bearcats. I'll take UCF plus 5.5 at home. UCLA plus 17 at Oregon. Virginia Tech, I've been on them a bunch this year. And the public's on the other side again against them. I'll take them laying 3 at Pitt. Oklahoma State's the anti-public side against Oklahoma. There's a lot of sharp money on Oklahoma State as well, plus 7 in the Bedlam game at Oklahoma. Man, you know, Auburn, their last outing, they absolutely demolished LSU. Tennessee with that Jeremy Pruitt, man, I don't get it, man. Tennessee can't score, and yet they're only getting 11. The public's all over Auburn. I'll take Tennessee on a flyer, plus 11. I've gone against Liberty, and it has not worked out. They are 22nd ranked in the country, 8-0. NC State's laying 3.5 against them. I'll take the Wolfpack. Actually, it's 3, not 3.5, excuse me. Washington minus 11 against Arizona. USC minus 2.5 at Utah. Stanford minus 3 against Washington State. And Hawaii, for the first time this year, makes the smell test. If you're really in trouble, based on my earlier picks, you can take the Rainbows plus 2 touchdowns in the one of my favorite movies and one of my favorite references of all time, Vince Vaughn, and in The Dilemma. The intervention scene in The Dilemma is one of the funniest scenes of all time when they are talking about betting Hawaii means you've got a gambling problem. Whenever you're up late at night and you bet the Hawaii game, you've got a gambling problem. Let's go to Sunday. I like Washington. The public's on Cincinnati. They like Joe Burrow, and Washington's favored. I like Washington laying a point. New England's effort Sunday night against Baltimore was one of my favorites of the year. They are laying a short number at Houston. I'll take the Texans plus 2. I've been right on Minnesota 5 times this year, Cooley, either betting against them or on them. I'm 5-0. I had the Vikings For the first time when they played Tennessee, they were getting three. They lost by one and covered. I had them against Houston as a 3.5-point dog. They won outright. I had them as a 6.5-point dog at Seattle. They should have won outright. They lost by a point. I had Atlanta against Minnesota when the Vikings were a 3.5-point favorite. Atlanta won big. Then I came back and I had the Vikings plus, I think, 5.5 or plus 6 at Lambeau, and they won that game. They won it outright. They are laying 7 to the Cowboys, and the world is on Minnesota this week. I like Dallas plus the 7. I don't know if they win the game, but Dallas was good enough against Pittsburgh with Garrett Gilbert. They get Dalton back. I said to Tommy yesterday, I have a feeling Dallas is going to play better here the next few weeks, maybe even on Thanksgiving Day. Dallas plus 7 against Minnesota. I love Indy this week, laying 2 at home against Green Bay. Anytime you get Aaron Rodgers as an underdog, the public's going to love that side. I'll take Indy minus the 2. And then I like the Eagles plus the 3. The public's on Cleveland. The Eagles, everybody thinks, is part of the stinky NFC East. I just gave you, by the way, 3 NFC East teams in the smell test. Washington, Philly, and Dallas. That should frighten you. As always, this is for entertainment purposes only. Tread lightly, but the smell test has Minnesota and Louisville tonight, New Mexico, Nebraska, UCF, UCLA, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, Tennessee, NC State, Washington, Southern Cal, Stanford, and Hawaii tomorrow. And then the Skins, the Texans, the Eagles, the Cowboys, and the Colts on Sunday. There you go. Cooley's Lock
of
the Week.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, were you going to ask me, am I going to bet all these?
I have to. Let me ask you 3 questions.
Yeah.
First question, do you think some of this COVID stuff is affecting the actual betting on games? Like, more people are betting in a certain direction for a certain reason. There's less unknown to a lot of it. Because this year is some really interesting lines throughout the year. And some, I don't know, some big public plays. You've had more smell test picks than really ever before. Do you think that there's an impact of some of the COVID stuff on it?
Well, I have no idea whether or not it's been a help or a hindrance to the better or to the house. I can tell you the better's had a decent year this year so far. But one thing is for sure, the amount of gambling on sports during the pandemic has gone up significantly.
Then do you think, well, it's also that betting's legal. Do you think the significant legal betting going up has impacted somehow the outcome of the lines? Or
no.
I mean, there's something different about this year.
No.
It feels different.
I don't see anything different in, like, the spreads. I think it's been harder for Vegas because you don't know, you know, you're putting lines out there with the risk that key players are going to be out. And then, by the way, the games are going to be postponed, which has happened a lot, but that just voids the bet. The worst is when somebody, you know, makes a big wager on, let's just say, Louisville, because we want them to win, and they got them at 17.5, 18 when the line opened up, and then Syracuse ruled out 6 people due to COVID, but they're going to play the game anyway. And you had big wagers at 17.5, 18. Now they bumped the line up to 19, 19.5, 20, and, you know, they win by 20, you know, they win by 19. But your big money came in early. I mean, some of those things can happen. I mean, but there's just as much risk that the bettor's going to be on the wrong side of that as there is the house. So,
yeah, sure.
Anyway.
What are you going to do while all this goes on? Just check scores afterwards?
Because you know,
a massive number of games. Normally, if I were going to bet games, which I don't do, I would do it because it creates entertainment and a reason to watch the game. You just seem like you have a problem.
No, so that's a really good question. What's been really interesting about this year, like college football, because it's been so weird and so many games have been postponed and so many teams have played a lot of games and other teams have played so few and it's just not seeming like a real season. I haven't watched as much college football. So even, like, I mean, I can tell you that there have been multiple Saturdays, especially earlier when it was warmer, where I was just out playing golf. And I'd be checking my phone to see the scores, but, you know, whatever. I wasn't sitting there, you know, for 15 straight hours watching games. I haven't done that once on a Saturday this year. Sunday, obviously, yeah. is a, you know, that's because of our team is playing, and it's a big part of, you know, what we do, what I do certainly. So I'm sitting there Sunday from 1 o'clock until, you know, 11:15, the night game is over. But no, the college football fan that I am year in and year out, it's been a totally different consumption pattern this year for me. I've watched so much less. Do you know, like tomorrow at 3:30, you know, usually the big SEC game of the week, Spotlight 3:30 CBS, you know, tomorrow.
Right.
Because of all the SEC games that have been canceled for this weekend, do you know, CBS tomorrow at 3:30 in the afternoon on CBS, there's not an SEC game they're showing. At 3:30 on CBS, they are showing San Diego State at Nevada. That's how sad this season's been and weird, you know, because so many SEC games have been canceled. I mean, this weekend, I'm looking at Ole Miss Texas A&M was supposed to be that game, and it got canceled. So anyway, what else do we have?
All right.
Prediction on the game. Give me a final score.
I think this looks like a 24-21 game for Washington.
I got Washington 20.
I don't like that, though.
Okay.
Hold on. I don't like that because I think Cincinnati gets at least a field goal in this game. So somehow Cincinnati's going to get to, I don't know, it's 24-20. Two field goals, Cincinnati, 24-20.
You know, Seattle ended up with 28 last night, but they did not get to 28 the normal way. They had a safety in the game. They had a missed extra point in the game. And then they had a couple of field goals in the game. Jason Myers kicked a few field goals. So it was a weird way to get to 28. Sometimes you can get to 21 like you just described, and there could have been a couple of field goals in there. Anyway, I got 27-20 Washington. I think they have an error-free day, and that leads to a win. In sort of a fast-moving game where both teams move the ball and score, but Washington ends up winning 27-20. And then we'll get ready for a Thanksgiving Day game, which would have, you know, some meaning in the NFC East. Anyway, that's it for the day. Enjoy your time back in Northern Virginia. Call me a little bit later on, and we'll figure out a time to get together. Or not.
Sweetness.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.